Mr. Rose, reel 11.
I was about the fifth one in, I think. He said, "Well, you were very good." I said, "I can't remember. I've never hit the ball." I stepped up and the chappy at the other end bowled this. But this, we played with the gymnasium shoes on, because your ordinary leather shoes wouldn't stand it. See, as soon as you move, you slipped on it. And this ball came down, quite a slow one was, bounced about 10 feet away from me, and I took a terrific swipe at it, missed it, and fell on the stumps. Oh, nearly broke all my ribs. Of course, I was automatically out. I got a mighty cheer as I marched off, probably, with these bruised ribs at the back. Three stumps, I believe I've still got them here to the present day. So that was the only time I ever played cricket in the Navy. It was just as well, really.
But you get this, the rivalry between deck and engine was that way. It was expressed in games.
In sport, yes.
What about the relationship between the ERAs and the Stokers? They were good mates.
Very good. I've met some very good ERAs, always willing to impart any knowledge to you.
You found that they were quite willing to tell you things and to...
Yeah, they were very, very good. But, no, I don't ever remember. Well, we never didn't ever. They lived in a mess on their own, you know, at the other end of the ship, more or less next to the officers.
And you didn't have much contact with them outside the engine room, outside the stokehold?
No, very little.
And the relationship between the engineer officers and the engine room
staff.
Was different from the one on deck between the officers and their...
Oh, they would be. Yeah, they would be, because you came in contact more, you see. An engine room officer, he was always around you, either in the engine room or in the stokehold. I mean, every watch they came in to visit each stokehold or each engine room, and as they walked past you, everything all right. They were very, very good.
They're a different kind of man, though, I think you said, too. They were a different breed, really, from the deck.
They seemed it. See, whether the officers of the upper deck seemed me more gently, if you will, follow the meat. They didn't seem to do any hard work. They either went to officer the watch or up on the fore bridge or wherever it was, so you never came in contact with them at all. But the engineers, of course, you were always in contact with. And they always seemed so understanding too. Any problems there you took. I recall many, many engineers that were real fathers, you know. When you had a problem, or others had a problem there, you'd always seem to go into it.
Can you describe an occasion when you had some difficulty or when you know somebody who had some problem and went to the engineer? Lieutenant, or?
Yes, the chappy up in Yorkshire, when he had his wife, I don't think he had a kiddie, no. His wife was suddenly endowed with three or four soldiers billeted on them up in Yorkshire, and of course she wrote and told him, and I think they hadn't been long married, and of course he was very jealous, that she got three or four soldiers staying in the same house. And it upset him terribly. And he came to me one day, we were talking about this, he said, "How can I get home?" I said, "Well, you can't get home. That's pretty..." This is out of the Mediterranean. I said, "It's obvious you can't get home." So I said, "Why don't you see the engineer?" So he saw the engineer and explained it all to him, and the engineer right away, of course, it took a long, long while to get the letters to get to and from, because you know out there they were always sinking the ships with the mails on board or vice versa, coming to you. So you could never guarantee you would ever get a letter. But they got this one through, and the officer commanding it, my name and decided under those circumstances he'd find billets for these four chaps, and I think it all ended happily. But that was one of the few instances, you know, I expect there were good many, but I just can't recall them.
And in that way, engineers were somewhat more approachable.
They were, yes. You could joke with the engineers. Well, I never attempted on the upper deck.
And you told me about the one time you were assisting an engineer in Copenhagen, one of the, you were alongside, and he was doing a big repair on the turbine.
Low, up in Russia.
Russia.
Yes. Yes, Low. Engineer Kumar, Lieutenant Engineer Low. The one, he eventually went out to the Navy shortly after I left. We corresponded for a bit, because when I left, he said, if ever you want a character, he said, I'll always give you one. And after I came out of the Navy, I'd been out about a month, I received a letter from him asking me if I would like to go out to Melbourne or Sydney, I forget which was. He was opening up a new power station there, and he was going to be in charge, and he said he could offer me a good position. And at the present moment, at the time, the wife wasn't all to be desired, and that's more or less the reason I got out of the Navy in health, and I was unable to go. I often wonder what would have been the eventual outcome of it, but there it is.
But he was the man who gave you a present.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, in this same motorboat that I told you I was taken over by, from this chappie that folded it up. When we went to Copenhagen, which was our base out there, every about 3 months, we come down there more or less for a break, you see, from the routine, pretty arm-drum routine. And he said one day, if ever you go away in the boat, for the Lord's sake, don't stop the engine, he said, because the Danes, he said, they are really experts in internal combustion engine, he said, and don't let it stand, he said, that you suddenly find yourself floating up Copenhagen Harbour with the Admiral aboard, can't start the motor up. So he said, I'll tell you what to do, he said, if I find that nothing happens this time, while we were in there for about a week or 10 days, right, he said, I'll buy you a new pair of shoes, because normally we had to walk. The upper deck, incidentally, the motorboat was as white as a driven snow scrub, so no one ever walked on it. You see, only us were there going to the down into the engine room of the motorboat. And most of the time, we used to take our boots off and tie them around the neck, rather than walk over and make these oil marks. And he said, if I can guarantee that you run that motor, he said, without breaking down, the time here, he says, a special time, I don't know why it was, and he said, I'll buy you a new pair of shoes, gymnasium shoes, that you can walk on. And I did, and he did. And but I often thought afterwards, well, I've seen the very old boats running around in Copenhagen Harbour that well, they aren't seem to be going along at all.
Discipline was more relaxed and more easy in a way than it was on deck. There was a more knowledge about people's lives and how they
yes.
lived. And
well, the engine room staff consisted, I'd take an engine room, two engine rooms, you see, forward and after engine room, consisted of the RA on the throttles of the engines, turbines we're taking, and probably only two others down in the engine room, the evaporator watchkeeper and the dynamo watchkeeper. So you got a very, you came in contact very little with each other throughout, so consequently there's never any cause to pardon.
And discipline in the engine room was, as I say, different, though. I mean, there was more awareness about people's, you know, as people, instead of just figures walking about the deck. Because you told me about that incident when you were on your very first ship, you got 3 days extra work for taking out the light bulb.
That's my first ship.
Your very first ship.
My first ship.
Tell me about that incident and what happened, because it's quite interesting.
Well, at the time, we were at sea, and that class is a ship, they had what they called a nautilus crew. About 50% of the normal crew that you would have on a ship. So consequently, in the watchkeeping, instead of watchkeeping 4 hours in three watches, A, B and C usually called, they could only afford you to do two watches. So consequently, you had 4 hours on, or down in the stoke hole, and 4 hours off. By the time you come up and had your bath, climbed there, this in the night, of course, climbed into the hammock, still sweating drops of blood, especially it warm down below the decks, and you lay there and pitched and tossed, and sometimes you had about half an hour of sleep, and along came your relief and called you again. And then you went again for another 4 hours, which was most tiring. And this time I just about had enough of it. Over my head was a light, what they call the police lights. It must be kept on at all times, see. But it was unguarded, police light. Most police lights are guarded and locked. And I was so fed up with the heat and all that lot that I got my handkerchief and took the bulb out. And no sooner I got the bulb out than I had a terrific shake of the hammock there. Yeah. Righto, get out, get your trousers on, up on the fore bridge. See the officer of the watch. This is about 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, I assume it was. It was after midnight, well after midnight. 1 o'clock probably. And it was blowing a gale up there. And slight rain, if I can remember rightly, and cold. And I stood up on the bridge. We climbed up on the bridge. The officer of the watch at night time was up on the bridge, see, during the days and the quarter deck. And I had to wait his convenience. Well, this chief there told him of the crime I'd just committed, see. So all he said, okay, commander's report in the morning. And down we went. I staggered all the way up there, got out of bed, climbed all the way up on the bridge in this cold night, and well, I hadn't caught pneumonia, so I was wringing wet through with sweat. And down and fired in the hammock. Put the light back, he said. I could have thrown the light at him. That was one of the times that I did rebel against a bit of discipline. And next morning, sure enough, 10 o'clock, up in front of the commander. He's caught on the quarter deck of the ship. And of course, I explained to him. Now, this is where we come out the human side of the engineers again. We had a wonderful engineer, a Scotch engineer, I told you. And he said, the men are working under very adverse conditions. Two watches, four on, four off, and we only got a nucleus crew, and you know, he painted everything. The commander should have been crying his eyes out with what. And he said, normally I think I would have got more than that because of a serious crime taken like that. So he said, award 3 days extra work. And that meant about 2 hours a day for 3 days, see, in my off duty time. And of course, as soon as we marched away off the quarter deck there, engineer behind, he said, all right, go up on the boat there, then wait up there a bit and then show off out of it. He said, I don't want to see you no more. Just like that, I thought, what a human.
Because this was your first trip.
That was my first crime too in the Navy, my first boat. I was beginning to realise what discipline was then.
But there was this feeling that there was more camaraderie and more comradeship, really.
Yes, yes. Well, they knew you worked hard, and consequently that very few swung the lead. I can't remember people swinging the lead. I remember one little chappy there, he Pomponian, come from Portland. And we'd been at sea in the old Erie, and when she rolled, believe me, just like an old lady. She come up in the air there and shake her skirts and down again underneath the waves. And this chappie, Green his name was, believe me, he suffered with absolute vile seasickness. He was an absolute, I don't know, he hadn't, lifeless he was. The moment that we went to see, he was lost all powers of his legs and arms. And the verbally used to go down the stoggle, and there comes the comradeship again. You stick him in the bunker, and well, other people went. And this time they went down the bunker there. He'd been left him sitting in there, and he tried to hang himself. So it just shows how bad he was. But that's a comradeship, see. This chap, he felt so ill, he got him down the stoggle to do his watch, see, and then stuck him in the bunker out of the way till the watch ended. Someone else do his job for him.
And on this question of discipline on board, I mean, if that had been found out, of course, he was unfit for duty, he would have been in serious trouble.
Yes, of course he would.
And no one found out. The officer didn't know, and they... Maybe he did know, perhaps.
No, I don't think anyone ever spilled the beans. Very good chief in charge of the Stoghold. For the humanity of the Navy came to its being.
And also...